For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Martin McCloskey on fire. This is Mark McCloskey on fire on Newstalk STL.
I get knocked out, but I get up again. You're never gonna keep me down. I get knocked out, but I get up again. You're never gonna keep me down.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mark McCloskey, Mark McCloskey on fire. Welcome back. Newstalk STL 101.9, 94.1. And you can catch me on Twitter, now known as X. You can catch me on my Rumble feed. You can catch me on Facebook and any place you get your podcast. Well, this has been a very, very interesting week in politics, very interesting week in the world. And, of course, the big news is the current war that Israel's waging against Hamas and the Gaza Strip. And, you know, most of us hear those words and hear those names and those locations. I suspect that the most Americans know very little about what's actually going on over there. And, you know, there has been a almost universal propaganda stream coming forth from all the networks, both the legacy media and the so-called conservative media, and from virtually every single politician, all just reciting the same talking points. And nobody's actually discussing anything that, you know, resembles fact or data-based analysis. So I thought it might be interesting today to bring on a guest who actually might have some insights based on actual knowledge and data rather than just on hyperbole and propaganda. A former guest on the show, and you know, welcome back in Mr. Chris Street. Chris, welcome to the show again.
Well, it's great to be here, Mark.
So give us a, you know, what we hear about on the news is that there was this monumental intelligence breakdown that allowed the Hamas to come in and do these horrendous acts in Israel. And, you know, the impression that the average citizen like myself has is that Israel has got the most comprehensive internal security mechanism in the world and the most comprehensive intelligence networks and a variety of internal and external intelligence agencies that can track the footsteps of a mouse through the dark. And yet here we have, you know, kind of 19th century aggressors coming in pickup trucks and motorcycles and hand gliders and inflicting devastating wounds. Tell us how that can happen.
Well, you got to put in perspective how we got here, because this isn't a little walk up the path story. Back in the early 2000s, Israel funded Hamas to try to break up Fatah, you know, to have the West Bank and Gaza separated. So they funded these guys. They gave weapons to these guys early on. And then, you know, be careful what you wish for. You might get it. Mm-hmm. Isn't that kind of what America had in Afghanistan?
I was going to say, sounds like Osama bin Laden to me.
Right. So when you look at these perspectives, you've got to understand that there's, you know, there's the day-to-day fighting and action and such like that. And then there's the big story. The big story is that you have this mass amount of chaos going on right now because the big economic boom that drove the world for the last 40, 45 years, which was the rise of the investor and venture capital, which created the microchip and all that, that was a fantastic concept. It drove America and then it created the outsourced labor demand. And now it is collapsing. And with that, all of this ego and, you know, that is associated with people thinking because they've succeeded, they're smart. This is about artificial intelligence. You know, this is the same place, the same time that Israel was fooled in back in the 1973 war, right?
Yeah.
And right on the Egyptian border there, it was hiding in plain sight. And in this situation, Israel almost failed. It was almost conquered in 1973 by the Syrians coming down and the Egyptians coming up. You know, for whatever reason, they survived. And Israel has three intelligence agencies, the Mossad, which you always hear about, the Shin Bet, which is like the FBI, and then they have the Anon. The Anon is military intelligence. And the 73 failure was really about Mossad, external. And so the military decided that they would put a new element in their process. They would challenge every intelligent report that came to them, aggressively beat them down to a pulp to justify their positions. And that went on till about 2008, when you replaced the head of intelligence, the Anon, with somebody who believed in artificial intelligence. We've been hearing a lot about that, right, Mark?
Oh, yeah.
So we have spectacular data collection in the CIA, spectacular knowledge of movement, and it's completely failing. You can't lose Afghanistan, Armenia, and Azerbaijan, the little revolution that didn't last an hour while America was doing, you know, we decided we'd flip Russia, and we had 2,500, you know, Americans in there training the Armenians in the time, the Azerbaijanis, who decided that they'd flip from the Turks to the Russians, a spectacular defeat, you know, in a matter of hours, yeah. That geopolitically is something that hasn't happened in 200 years. We've been managing our own disaster. So when you come forward to this issue in Israel, you had great knowledge on the ground. We were watching for all the things we knew to watch for. And these people, sort of riding donkeys, understood what we were doing. And I say we, you know, these intelligence are very incestuous, and they countered that intelligence the old-fashioned way. They had no use of social media other than to make a phony story over here. So this is not just a small defeat, Mark. This is a crushing defeat of the Western military intelligence complex.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, I kind of have the concept that every square inch of Israel is surveilled constantly by video and fed into some central data crunching organization. Is that not the case?
Well, it's every 10 seconds, every square foot of Israel and, you know, the occupied territories is photographed, indexed, organized, all this very smart, brilliant things. You know, I grew up in Santa Clara. I went to Stanford. I went to UC. This was the toys that I grew up on that, you know, went to Wall Street and was really powerful. And then, you know, went on to the first Gulf War, you know, to proving just how spectacular it was. But people learn, and especially people who get victimized have plenty of time to learn a lot. Yeah. And that's what happened here, is that people know our gig and they've simply used superior tradecraft to counter it.
Well, tell us about that. What do you mean by superior tradecraft?
Security tradecraft is, if you know somebody's looking at you in such a way, I mean, there's always been, you know, the question here, is this a spy, a counter spy, a counter spy? You know, who on the ground was getting paid bribes? What information were they producing? You know, had the other side, you know, compromised the spies on the ground? Were, in fact, the spies for the Mossad really spies for Hamas? I mean, clearly the ego was so powerful that, you know, the Mossad must have believed that money can really buy true support. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so they had all of the right information from the book that they, you know, were writing. They were writing the most sophisticated intelligence book in the world, looking in every bedroom, you know, constantly checking everything, watching every phone call, following every phone, you know, rationing water, electricity, and other utilities so that people would have to go get them at a certain time. There's only a couple hours a day the water would run, and electricity would only run a couple hours a week, so that you knew when they went on the internet, that they kind of saved up for this, Mark, and they'd have to get their most important. Oh, I mean, this, the people behind this, and you see this everywhere in the elites in America and in Europe and, of course, in Israel, elites really think they're smart.
Yeah. Well, and I kind of get the impression, as one of my clients used to say, I kind of get the impression that the people that worship high tech can't understand how low tech people can exist, that you can communicate without cell phones, you can communicate without going online. There's these things called human voices and meetings and handwritten notes. I mean, as long ago as when Thomas Jefferson was president, he wouldn't put things through the mail for fear of having his information detected. And these days, you know, if you've got every foot being photographed, what do you say, every 10 seconds?
Every 10 seconds.
That's pretty stinking comprehensive surveillance. But if you're relying on what, algorithms to decide whether or not these are potential threats or not, instead of just...
Whoa, algorithms, very, very intelligent, brilliant, Yeah. And Mark, they use computers? Computers.
Yeah. Well, the fellow who left the studio here right before I got on the air was an old Marine from the Vietnam era. And he was saying, you know, in those days, you take a meal can, put some pebbles on it and tie it to a string. And when somebody, you know, was sneaking into your camp at night, you could hear the pebbles rattle. These days, you got a computer that wants to hear those pebbles rattling in cyberspace.
And a very special kind of noise. You know, they're remember when this thing went down, and that's the only thing you can say it went down, that that the Israeli military was asleep in the barracks because the penetrations didn't ring the bell of the algorithms and the computers, you know, pushed that, we call it in data, you call it noise. Mm-hmm. They pushed that noise out because they're only looking for like a plane coming over, you know, or some kind of rocket coming over, moving at a certain speed, a certain altitude, and these people used paragliders, which moved rather slow for a flying object.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, probably would have looked like a big bird.
Yeah.
And that was the idea, is that this computer was so sophisticated that it was pushing out the noise of, say, a big bird coming across, you know, making noise and going up through the penetration. So there's actually seven different forms of transportation used by Hamas to do this op. And once they were through the gate and once they're actually in the territory, there was no ability to alert the troops that something outside of the norm was taking place. They were only looking for this and that and that. And so most of the soldiers got, you know, they got shot in their sleeping bags while they were asleep.
Yeah.
It just shows you the power of the human condition. And it shows you that, that these people are not playing for a win. They're playing for the win. Because all good Marxists, and let's face it, that, you know, if you're in these kind of environments, colonialism type environments, you know, Marxism is the trade craft you pick up. And in Marxist trade craft, they talk about that your action is not your action, it's your opponent's reaction. So now you've got the situation where they horrifically killed people. You know, I think, and I'm not picking sides here. I don't want to say I think this is a horrible event, but you got to put it in perspective that I've seen no evidence to confirm that babies' heads were cut off.
Yeah.
That was the first media response. That amateur response of trying to sort of throw out something that would burn social media. If you're a professional trying to address a situation, you don't want to spread the fire hose. You want to listen to what's there.
Yeah.
If this is your only part, they just completely dominated that, which of course now is, you know, even the State Department's walking it back. But now you're in the situation that that this was a great trade craft. They killed people to make it, you know, as far away as 27 kilometers. I don't know if you heard this, Mark. One of those, one of the settlements is 27 kilometers away, and nobody there responded to any of the noise. You know, when these paragliders first came in, everybody at the concert, there was lots of drugs, sex, and rock and roll. But everybody in the concert, they thought it was, it's a Red Bull thing. You know, they're bringing and so they actually were cheering it. And, you know, they're, as they basically cheered for their own death, once you started machine gunning in all different directions, all these kids ran. And what's the first thing they did, Mark? Go on their phone. I mean, your telephone is a surveillance device.
Oh yeah.
And so the idea that you can get an op, you can get an app, I shouldn't say an op, an app, you can get an app to follow, you know, somebody else's signal, you know, find phone. That app is out there. That's basically what they use.
You know, Chris, we're going to have to take a break here. I'll bring you back on if you can hang on after the break, and we'll continue this. And, you know, what I'd like to talk about when we come back is the conditions in Gaza and the West Bank since the total siege and the occupation and what condition these folks are living under and what causes their determination. So we'll be right back with Chris Street on News Talk STL, Mark McCloskey on Fire.
Get more Mark McCloskey at newstalkstl.com. You're listening to Mark McCloskey on Fire on News Talk STL. For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com. Mark McCloskey on Fire. This is Mark McCloskey on Fire on News Talk STL.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mark McCloskey on Fire, News Talk STL 101.9, 94.1 on X, on Rumble, on Facebook, on every place you get your podcasts. And we're back now with Chris Street. You know, Chris, I wanted to have you tell our audience a little bit about the demographics and the physical location, for example, of the areas of the world we're talking about, because I suspect the average American, the average person listening to this broadcast or watching it, has no concept of where these things are. Describe for us, for example, the Gaza Strip, its size and location.
Well, the Gaza Strip is a very narrow strip on the ocean that is sealed by the Israeli Navy to the west, by the Egyptian army to the south, by Israelis to the east and the north. So it's basically a trash compactor. And you get all the food, or I shouldn't say all the food, about 90% of the food is brought in. About 40% of the electricity is locally produced, but it all comes in through the process of the Israelis. And you ration this. And they used to have a business of basically taking, you know, Palestinians and using them as cheap labor in Israel. And about 46% before this, you know, breakup of Fatah that ended up creating Hamas, you know, the Israelis helped create it, funded it. At that time, about 46.5% of Palestinians would work in Israel, a very dynamic economy already, and for, you know, but everybody was sort of happy about that. And then after the split, it dropped to about 26.5%. You know, half of all the, you know, employed people no longer worked anymore. And then from there, it went, you know, down to somewhere around 12% maybe on a daily basis. So if you have nothing to do, you know, there's plenty of time to produce children. And that, you know, it's kind of the industry of the Palestinians is producing children. It's also the industry of the, you know, Hasidic Jews, which don't work. And about, you know, maybe 20% of Israel's population, they have 10 kids, and the Palestinians have 10 kids. So when you look at this, you're on both sides, you're developing this bubble of military age men. Remember 2006, you're now 2023. Oh, they're 17 years old, huh?
Yeah.
Ah, so they're like perfect time, you know, to do military, to do revolutionary stuff. This is a trash compactor. The 88 miles of the area here is really within 141. 88 miles is absolutely dense. It's as dense as anything in the rest of the world. It's five times denser than Los Angeles, to give you sort of a perspective.
Yeah.
And you know, the buildings are only 5 and 6 stories there. But there's nothing really like it, other than maybe back in the old days of colonial India.
Yeah. Well, you know, and from my recollection, 42% of the population of Gaza is 14 years or younger, and the mean age in Gaza is 18 years old. You know, draftable age young men.
2006 to 2000, yeah.
Yeah. And now that Egypt, for example, isn't allowing the Palestinians to flee south, and the Israelis have now imposed an absolute embargo, cut off their food, their water, their fuel, their electricity. And the one power plant in Gaza ran out of fuel yesterday, and the hospitals are running out of fuel today. I mean, and then the Israelis say to 1.1 million out of the 2.2 million population, flee south because we're going to blow the north to smithereens, north of Gaza Strip. Where is 1.1 million people going to go in a prison country where you cannot leave?
Well, they're going to try to eject them into force Egypt to take them. You know, they tried to get Anwar Sadat to take to take the Palestinians. He didn't want them. So when you look at this, what's coming, though, remember, I don't care how good your tanks are. And oh, by the way, we've learned in Ukraine and we've learned now, of course, in this, that Israeli tanks are very weak from the top. So you can have kind of like a little balloon or even a. You know, some kind of aerial vehicle, as long as it comes down with a grenade. I mean, these things are penetrated by very small explosives, and the whole darn thing is just a disaster. So you're going to go down the street with these tanks in these big buildings. They're going to drop grenades right on the one weak spot of the tank. Okay, well, we'll shoot the top floors out. Well, that means that you're going to go through into the buildings. Oh, but they're all going to be booby-trapped. So what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to use dead cord alongside of one wall. You have to blow out a wall and then go through this wall into this place. Everybody's going to know where you are when you blow the wall, right?
Yeah.
So I understand Israel wants to do a lawnmower. You know, they want to end this forever. But these people are not going to quit. The history of the what did we learn from the Viet Cong? They don't quit.
Yeah.
They go underground. They tunnel. As sophisticated as we are, this goes back to the siege of Constantinople in 1500, where you know the Muslims tunneled in Sapard and blew the walls. Yeah. So there is no answer here. I guess you can starve them to death. But do they have stores? I'm sure the military has stores underground for a 3-month siege.
Yeah. Well, you know, the stated objective of Benjamin Netanyahu is to kill them all. I mean, genocide seems to be the desired result here. You would think, just from those of us on the outside, that the Israelis would be the last people to want to promote genocide, but it's what everybody's talking about. And I even heard American commentators saying, well, no, this is Mark Levin saying, well, we didn't care when we bombed Dresden how many civilians we killed, and so we can't be concerned about how many civilians are killed in Gaza. But, you know, they're human beings too, and the concept of going in and exterminating them is a very frightening thought to me.
Remember I said the goal of Hamas is not their action, it's the other side's reaction. So this is going to create the deadliest experience that Israel has ever had. they're going to lose tremendous numbers of troops. And as you know, these people have lived a pretty good life and aren't used to being they're not the 1948 crowd, right?
Yeah.
So I think the worst thing that Israel could do is do this invasion, you know, turn it to glass, liquidate them, but in the process take massive losses. And those massive losses are going to undermine, first of all, it's going to undermine their world support. I mean, the pictures here will be horrific on both sides, but more important, it'll undermine the internal willingness to take this kind of a hit.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, then you've got the possibility, and certainly what's being promoted by the media in this country, and that is a regional conflict growing to a global conflict of bringing in the Syrians and the Jordanians, and then doing a first strike against Iran. And then what happens when you get Iran in the mix and you get the Russians in the mix, and pretty soon we're looking at World War III. And that prospect doesn't seem very appealing to me, I can tell you for sure.
Well, I think it's, you know, that's where the common thought would be. But rather than, you know, going the common path, what I think, Mark, is going to happen is you're just going to form that dividing line. You know, that globalism is truly dead. Nothing here is good for globalism. Yeah. Now these people.
That's the one good thing to come out of this, right?
You push 2 million Palestinians out into the world. You know, what about our borders? Yeah. How many are already here? What's going on? I mean, this is beyond a doubt, a crusade.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, and the crusades turned out really well for us, didn't they?
They were good at first, but not so good afterwards. I mean, but you can't stop this process. And I'm a believer that you got to go through this process. Because the economics have failed, the cultures failed, the social movements failed, you know, the schools. I teach university, so I know what goes on. The professors and the TAs in universities are very, very left-wing Marxist. And the students are already flipping to being conservatives. Wasn't this what Jimmy Carter did, you know, to college students and young people around America? One day they woke up and they go, oh, this isn't about helping other people. This is about us going down.
Yeah.
And that's already taken place in the universities. These kids will do anything to get an A, but don't think that they love you or appreciate you if you're a Marxist flamethrower, because you're not going to throw a flame. You know, you're a professor. You want them. There's a T-shirt they have, and you like this, Mark, that may the fires of the bombs I throw light my way home. You know, yeah. These are rich kids wearing, you know, anarchist type shirts. Uh-huh. They're not that.
Yeah. Yeah. I always like the privileged elite aligning themselves with a revolutionary downtrodden, but you know, that was that way back in 68 and 69 too. It's just, as you say, Jimmy Carter helped us out a little bit there.
Well, Che Guevara was a pretty sexy guy, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You still see him on T-shirts all the time.
All the time.
You just wonder if the people that wear those Che T-shirts have any idea what Che Guevara was about.
I see it. You know, I just want to tell you, the kids really love an adult screaming down their throat that they're colonialist, that they're scum, that they're, you know, they're male. They really, you know, they really respond well to that. Try it in your own family.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, of course, you know, from my perspective, all this is the great seal of the state of Missouri says, united we stand, divided we fall. And I see all of this as just a program to create enough division, to create enough little subgroups that people don't see the big picture. I see the same thing happening with, as I always say, never forget that the same people that are pushing the universal propaganda now about the war in Israel are the same people that were trying to destroy our government, destroy our way of life, destroy Western civilization, the same people that brought us COVID. And so why should we believe them now on this, you know, as they're seizing upon a new crisis to take more power and reduce our personal freedoms even more?
Well, they're panicking. You got to understand that coming out and being visible like this, you know, this is the panic of the left. The left understands that they are losing. They understand that the script is being flipped. And so they've got to go all in. They've got to win or they'll never have another chance for 50, 100 years.
Yeah.
I mean, they really understand that, you know, the sand is, you know, sliding away from their feet, that they were so entrenched. They had this power and it's not working. So they've got to double, triple and be more visible about it.
Yeah.
So, Mark, I think your audience, I assume, is very conservative. I love the flag on the back of the guy's coat. That's not a Che Guevara shirt.
My backside, by the way.
Oh, there you go. Well, there you go. Okay. But I'm saying my belief is, and you see this everywhere, that globalism is over. There's a lot of the elites that want to bring it back, to save it. I mean, in the middle of this, you know, Chuck Schumer, Senate leader Chuck Schumer, is in China trying to cut a deal with China. What a fool.
Yeah.
I mean, the Biden administration's trying to cut a deal with Iran and Venezuela during this to get cheap oil so the election's coming up.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the competition. They're just foolish.
And they're now hysterical, as you say. They see the end of their all powerful regime right in front of them, and all they can do now is panic and try to maximize fear, maximize distrust, and seize whatever small opportunity they have to preserve their power.
That's it.
Well, unfortunately, our time is up. I got to let you go. I sure appreciate your insights, and we'll have you back on the show. And I guarantee you that our crises are not going to reduce in number or intensity, and we'll need some clear thoughts.
See you then, Mark.
Take care, Chris. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be back here in just a second, and we're going to do my typical review of the week in politics, and it's been an interesting one. We'll be right back.
Get more Mark McCloskey at newstalkstl.com. This is Mark McCloskey on Fire on Newstalk STL. For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com. Mark McCloskey on Fire. Mark McCloskey on Fire on News Talk STL.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Mark McCloskey on Fire, News Talk STL 101.9, 94.1 on X, on Facebook, on Rumble, any place you get your podcast. Well, this has been a kind of an interesting week in politics, an interesting week in events. But, you know, the best thing about this week is, and I guess this goes back into last week, is that the left, the uniparty, I should say, the powers that be, are panicking in a way that I've not seen before. And my prime example is Hillary Clinton discussing what she has to do, what we, the left, what we, the uniparty, what we, the power structure, has to do with those evil MAGA Republicans.
I mean, we had very strong partisans in both parties in the past, and we had very bitter battles over all kinds of things, gun control and climate change and the economy and taxes. But there wasn't this little tail of extremism waving, you know, wagging the dog of the Republican Party as it is today. Mm-hmm. And sadly, so many of those extremists, those MAGA extremists, take their marching orders from Donald Trump, who has no credibility left by any measure. He's only in it for himself. He's now defending himself in civil actions and criminal actions. And when do they break with him? You know, because at some point, you know, maybe there needs to be a formal deprogramming of the cult members, but something needs to happen.
So we have to be deprogrammed. Where else have we heard those words? Well, let's see. Joseph Stalin deprogrammed 20 or 30 million of his fellow citizens by sending them to re-education camps and then straight to hell when he killed them. He also sent untold numbers to the gulags in Siberia to spend the rest of their lives working as slave labor. That was their deprogramming. Chairman Mao had this thing called the Great Leap Forward, and he killed, 50, 60 million of his fellow Chinese, starved them to death, worked them to death, put them in slave labor colonies, re-education colonies. I'm sorry, not slave labor colonies, re-education colonies where they were given enough food to keep them alive until they could work themselves slowly to death through starvation over years. That's Hillary Clinton. That's what she wants for us. She wants deprogramming, forced re-education of people that don't agree with her. People that have the gall to say things like, make America great again. And ladies and gentlemen, that's what we've got a guy that does that, right? You got a guy that says that on occasion. A guy that used to be president of the United States. A guy who, if he is not president of the United States again, we will never have a chance to save this republic. But he's being embattled in every direction by leftist prosecutors who have absolutely no respect for the law, no respect for precedent, no respect for civil obedience, no respect for anything that we hold near and dear. And I'll specifically mean right now, Letitia James, the prosecutor, the attorney general in New York, that is creating is suing Donald Trump for doing what every businessman has done since the beginning of time. And by the way, in a case where no one has lost a penny, she claims that Donald Trump has defrauded banks and insurance companies by inflating the value of his businesses to get good loans at good rates. Well, he paid off all those loans with interest. No bank is complaining. No insurance company is complaining. He made all of them money. But because Letitia James hates Donald Trump with a passion, she has vowed to make him pay. And here's a little bit. I mean, you could play these for hours, but here's a sample of Letitia James' vengeance, vehemence, hatred for Donald Trump.
No one is above the law, including this illegitimate president. And so, I look forward to going into the office of Attorney General every day, suing him, defending your rights, and then going home.
I'm running for Attorney General because I will never be afraid to challenge this illegitimate president.
And you know, in my case, where we were fighting one of these Soros-funded prosecutors, and we found out that she had used us in her campaign propaganda, used her vow to get even with us, viewed her vow to destroy us to get elected, we moved to have her removed from the case because of bias. And the trial judge did. And then she took it up to the Court of Appeals and lost. Then she took that up to the Supreme Court of Missouri and lost. We were able to get her and the entire circuit attorney's office tossed off the case for statements of bias that aren't one hundredth as vile and as persistent as Letitia James, or for that matter, Fannie Willis's comments about Trump in New York and Georgia. So I don't understand why they're still on the case, but I do understand because there's no justice anymore. There's no law. We live in a totalitarian state where the legal system isn't there to enforce the law, but to punish the political opposition. And that's just, unfortunately, the state of affairs in this country. And once again, we need to change that. And I'll sound like my broken record. The one guy that can do it, Donald J. Trump, and we need to get him elected president. Well, we have a problem right now in the House of Representatives. And that problem is that although those people that really care about the Constitution, really care about individual liberty, really care about defeating the uniparty and the left, they don't have enough votes to actually get elected because most of the people who have R's behind their names don't have any of those things in mind, don't really care about the Constitution, don't really care about individual rights, don't really care about our freedoms and our liberties and our God-given rights. What they care about is getting reelected. What they care about is moving out of Congress into a cushy lobbying position where they can make tens of millions of dollars for selling their influence after they have already sold their allegiance to those other lobbyists while they're in power. And so, you know, we got rid of Kevin McCarthy, and then what comes next? You know, the whatever it is, it's going to be more of the same because the powers that be never allow anything but the same to occur, because they have every intention of continuing to be the powers that be. And they've worked too hard and too long to make any, have any real change occur. And despite what my guest said earlier in the show about how globalism has failed and how the left is panicking, and they are panicking, and their monopoly on power is at risk, but they will win unless we all pull together and elect Donald Trump, because he's the only guy with the guts, the only guy with a force of will, the only guy that has an FU to the to the powers that be that can actually change things. And if we don't get him elected, it won't matter what happens on any down-ticket item, won't matter who's the Speaker of the House of Representatives, won't matter who the majority leader is, because the majority leader of the world wants to destroy us, and that's that deep state. That's that swamp. That's that power that be, and they be everywhere. And we have another crisis on our hands now, because you can't have enough crises. And as the left always says, you can't let any good crisis go to waste. And so isn't it interesting? Right when support for the war in Ukraine is diminishing, right when their ability to convince us all that we have to spend hundreds of billions of dollars to support the corrupt government of Ukraine and buy Ukrainian oligarchs villas in Switzerland and Lamborghinis without any recourse, without any accounting, right when American people are just about to wake up and more of them say, we can't have this kind of fraud anymore, guess what? Now we've got a new crisis. Now we've got an invasion of Israel where everybody is saying this is the worst invasion, the worst death of Israelis since the Holocaust, and we have to do whatever it takes, wherever it takes, to preserve Israel and to defeat its enemies. Where have you heard that whatever it takes, how much it takes, however long it takes language before? That was a language that everybody in the Unipress was saying about Ukraine 6 months ago, okay? But now we've got it in favor of Israel. Well, let's put some of this stuff in perspective, right? We have very selective outrage. You cannot turn on a TV station, be it mainstream legacy media or Fox or Newsmax, without the only story being Israel 24/7, okay? What, 600-700 people were reported killed the first day. Now it's up to 1,300. My guess is that number is going to increase every day because the number isn't big enough to impress anybody, maybe. I don't know. But when you've got the most secure, the most surveilled country in the world, with the greatest intelligence gathering agencies, agencies like the Mossad that put fear in the hearts of men all over the world, who can somehow not recognize the fact that their country is being invaded by people on donkeys and hand gliders and motorcycles, I don't buy it. But I can tell you this, that there is a difference between what's in the strategic interest of the United States and what's in the strategic interest of Israel. And they've got every right in the world, the Israelis, to defend themselves. But the United States' strategic interest is not enhanced by getting into World War III. If this develops into a regional conflict, and if Israel inflicts some first strike on Iran, and then the Russians get pulled in, well, you know, there's three major nuclear powers involved in this little triangle. There's Russia, there's the United States, and there's Israel. And Israel has hundreds of atomic weapons, both atom bombs, hydrogen bombs, and what are euphemistically called enhanced radiation devices, meaning neutron bombs. They have ICBMs. They can deliver their nuclear weapons anywhere around the world. They have long-range missiles. You imagine a situation where this develops into a war, not just between Arabs and Israelis in the Middle East, but we get the nation of Iran with 90 million people with a standing army of a million involved in it, and people start lobbing nukes around. Think about what that might mean for the world. Think about what that might mean for you and me, our children, our country. It is a prospect that everybody should be terrified of, and the people running our country are screaming hysterically. They are not engaging in a calm consideration of what may come. You know, nations aren't necessarily led by geniuses, and I don't know who's running our nation, but the ostensible head of this nation, that moron named Joe Biden, has no mind at all. And here in a crisis situation where the world may disintegrate into nuclear warfare, and we're talking about doing that after the loss of, let's say, 1,500 Israelis, which is a terrible loss. But ladies and gentlemen, 107,000 Americans died last year of opioid overdoses, the vast majority from fentanyl coming through the southern border from China, and you don't hear the outrage about that, and you don't hear all the media saying we got to close the border and stop this death of hundreds of thousands of Americans, hundreds and thousands of Americans, and yet we have this hysterical crisis over Israel where no matter what it takes, however long it takes, we have to save Israel and its borders. Well, what the hell about American borders? What about our children dying of overdoses? What about some outrage about what's going on right here in the United States of America? Why don't we put the interests of America first? Because, ladies and gentlemen, that's what the MAGA movement, the Make America Great movement, is all about, and that's putting America first, putting Americans first, putting the welfare of our husbands and wives and sons and daughters and our grandchildren first. And if the rest of the world has to suffer because we're putting ourselves first, well, then that's what it's going to be. But our dollars should go to our defense. Our dollars should go to our health and welfare. And our government should protect us, not Ukraine and not Israel. And thank you very much.
Get more Mark McCloskey at NewstalkSTL.com. This is Mark McCloskey on Fire on Newstalk STL. For podcast articles and more, find us on NewstalkSTL.com.